Welcome back to Inside on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The Nevada City Rancheria Nisenan Tribe lost federal recognition in 1964, and in the 60 years since, has been unable to own any part of its ancestral land. But that looks to be changing. For the past several months, the tribe has been working to acquire a couple hundred acres in the Sierra foothills, home to historic Nisenan Village site. And as of this morning, the fundraising effort to purchase the land is narrowing in on its goal. Over $1.4 million has been raised of its $1.5 million goal. Joining us now to talk about the significance of this venture is Shelley Covert. She is the Nevada City Rancheria Nisenan Tribal Council spokesperson, as well as the Executive Director of California Heritage Indigenous Research Project, or CHIRP. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hi there, Vicky. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. Very happy to be speaking to you. I would love to just learn more about yourself, how you got involved with being the Tribal Council spokesperson, as well as being involved with CHIRP.
Oh, right. Wow. What a long, long, crazy trip it's been. I think... For myself, the leadership aspect comes from within my family. My mother was the first chairwoman. My grandfather was just part of the family. In the old traditional style, there you would have family heads that would lead in a specific village, and then there were district. You know, sort of how we have our American society set up today. Very similar. The voices that come out to be part of the whole, and so. I feel, you know, lately I've been, when they say, you know, you should take self-care, like these things I say to my colleagues and my friends, like, oh, you're looking a little stressed. Have you like taken care of yourself lately? That's kind of absent in my life right now, although it sounds wonderful, but the practicality of it at any given moment is not so. But as I feel, I lament and feel sorry for myself sometimes because there's just so much work and not enough play these days. But it all comes down to responsibility. And I look at our leadership. I really loved the last interview, your last guest, somebody stepping into those moments of responsibility. You know, there's no glory and the spotlight is not maybe what it looks like from the outside. It really comes down to true self-responsibility and the caring for and truly caring for the people that you're representing and wanting to make a change in their suffering or make life better for people. And I take that very, very, very seriously. And I didn't choose it. I just look around me and see that I'm a little more capable than someone else, probably to just flap and yap because I talk. I enjoy speaking with people. I enjoy exploring why things don't work and finding creative ways, you know, to maybe make a difference. So I've found myself in the position, strangely, looking around like, you know, the cheese stands alone sometimes. I'm like, well, okay, you know, I guess this is my thing right now. And it's really important, the moment we're in this country where we're actually talking about equity and inclusion and fairness. We're talking about these serious, serious topics that aren't, should not be empty words ever. And looking at people around the country, and it's very reflected in how many people have donated. I think we have 2,600 contributors to our GoFundMe campaign, and from down to $3 all the way up into hundreds of thousands of dollars that foundations are giving. But people need this, and we are having to craft sometimes the ways that people can get there and understand from Indian country what that means in our communities, what that means out when you live out in the sticks and you have no land, and then you have all the other things like poverty and, you know, the homelessness, the things that your previous guest was speaking of. They're very real in all of our communities if you're from an underserved and disadvantaged people, you know, and then layering on all the historic trauma and the stories that have just never been told, the true reality of what happened in California to the Native population here.
Yeah, I mean, this clearly is a deeply personal pursuit of yours that is tied to descendants and prior generations and so personal to you. You're the executive director of CHIRP, which is the California Heritage Indigenous Research Project. How does that fit within the Nisenan tribe, with the Nevada City Rancheria?
So as we live in this moment without federal recognition, and I know that being a federally recognized Native American person does not mean that, yay, you know, the fight's over, everything's perfect now, you know, job well done, everybody can go party and have a nice day. There's still great despair within that. And but what federal recognition brings is sovereignty, is the right to self-govern your people and the right to self-determination. It also opens up, I mean, this is the part that I see almost daily, is the grants, the federal, you know, quote unquote, Indian programs. I know that word, you know, that word, we're trying to move away from even the word Indian. And I use it as mostly because the federal government has Indian programs. And not to be disrespectful to the federal government, but if we were to change anything up and change our name and they couldn't find us anymore, they'd just like go, huh, I guess they're not here anymore. And we don't want to further confuse the federal government to be able to identify and find us. So we will continue to use that word until those things change. But you when you're federally recognized, you gain access to all the federal Indian programs. That's economic development, housing, education, healthcare, environmental stewardship of whichever lands that tribe has taken into federal trust for them. There's this whole plethora of funding that is allocated for the tribal governments themselves to function. And without access to that, we didn't have a vehicle. And so creating a 501c3 enabled us to receive donations, write for grants, and have a legal foot that, you know, a legal vehicle that we could use to our benefit to try to, in some ways, whenever possible, mimic some of those programs that really takes to you're governing an entire nation of people, a society, and it comes with everything that you need to govern those folks. And even though we're a small tribe, it doesn't change the needs in all of those buckets. So CHRP really does a great job. We started out really just, we were completely erased. There's no mention of the people except in the long ago past in history books. The history, as many, I'm sure your audience knows very well, history is told through the lens of usually the conquering people. So there was no lens of the California Gold Rush from the Nusinam perspective. And there was such a genocide that like 98% of the people were lost. So to the descendants of that 2% to be able to tell the story and unerase themselves, fix the history books, you know, become visible in the local community. That's really what we've been trying to do with CHRP, is how can someone understand us and support us if they can't see us?
When it comes to 1964, when the Nevada City Rancheria Nisenan tribe lost federal recognition, what happened?
So in 1958, Congress enacted the Termination Act is what it was. It terminated several, lots of tribes. In California, 44 were terminated through this act of Congress all at one time. And for us, it took a long time. The documents and the paperwork was done to terminate the tribe, but there were mining. So a lot of the local mines surrounded the reservation up in Nevada City on Cement Hill where it was. And there were court fights and trying to liens against the property, all these different things where they were trying to, they did not want the Indians to have the land up there. And they fought them for like 70 years or something, trying to get rights to that. It was 76 acres. I mean, of all the lands that were in Nisenan territory, all this fight for all these years over 76 acres. And so it took a long time before they actually sold the reservation and terminated everything. So our final date out is like in 1964. And they supposedly terminated the tribe. They sold the land at auction. And then the people who bought the land at the auction, then subdivided it and sold it off. So folks actually live in homes up on the old reservation. It's funny because that's one of the things that pops up every now and then where people with, I think it lives in the stereotypes and the fear of what you don't know. They're scared that if we get federally recognized someday, we're going to come kick them off the land and take the land back. And it's it feels absurd. And I understand people navigate out of fear sometimes. You know, as we're trying to get this land, one of the biggest questions that continuously came was, you're going to put a casino out there. We want that land conserved and preserved. We don't want a casino. And, you know, tribes all across the nation have done incredible things because they were smart enough to figure out the one thing that didn't get shut down and taken away instantly, and that is gaming. And tribes have voices now. There's a power building, you know, with Indian country, and it's glorious. And also for us up here, there's no correct way to step. You know, some people have said you can't get federal recognition without gaming because then you get all this money and they lobby for you and all these things. And on the other side, we're surrounded by federal tribes, some of whom game, who would maybe squash our recognition efforts because they would see it as competition. And, you know, casino gaming started in the 90s. And I want to talk about these deep issues and needs of the tribe, and I wish they could be two separate conversations. And again, I know people lump it together because they're afraid of what's going to happen.
Yeah, you know, that brings me to a big development. This is a positive one. You are pretty much very, very close steps away from these 232 acres that are located on a historic Nisenan village site. Can you describe what this land looks like today if you were to head there right now?
It's so beautiful. So this is the Nisenan site of Yulicha, and it's got all the yummy things you would want to close your eyes and see. It's got the rolling green hills. It's got forested areas. There's ponds. There's lots of brought in water from NID, our local water district. There's, you know, the water ditches and canals that aren't natural to the land, but there's a lot of water there. Funny how those little canals have made their own ecosystems after time. So even though it's not of nature, they still are of nature now, that if you took it away, like all those little plants and animals, you know, that they depend on the leaks sometimes in these ditches. It's just crazy, crazy, but it's beautiful. It's already built from the Quaker folks that have lived there and owned the land for 60 years. So they had, it's called the John Woolman School, and they had the first Quaker high school this side of the Mississippi in the West. So they're very proud of it. The man, John Woolman, they hold in great reverence as just a very good, moral, thinking Quaker man. And so the school was named after him, and they've had programming there for the last 60 years. They had the high school, they had a boarding school where kids would come out from all over the country and live there for the semesters and learn. And they have quite an alumni that they say that school changed their life. And living in that landscape, of course, with the wildlife and everything, it's very beautiful. There is a medicine rock there that remains, and that's the big grinding rock with the holes that most of us are taught are just for acorn processing. But actually, it's a very powerful medicine site right at the bottom of this little hill that has a complete view of the night sky. And so our ancestors delved in with the stars very deeply. One of the things my grandpa told me was that when we die, our spirit goes to Estomianim, which is our sacred mountain, our place of creation, which today we all know as the Marysville Buttes, also known with the other S name. I know Grandpa said it wasn't polite to call it that. but we go there, we eat our first spirit food, and then we go off to the Milky Way. So being able to engage with the stars in a way that we haven't for, you know, since the gold rush time, our tribe has had no access to these spots because most things are on private land or they've been built on top of. So that is beautiful. But I also look at from my traditional ecological knowledge and my tribal background, the things that my grandma and grandpa taught me, that the land is in deep need of restoration. There's two little creeks that flow through it that are barely, I mean, they're just limping along. There's so much overgrowth and things that need to be tended before we could get out there and do our cultural practices, which It's so funny. Everything Nisenan culture is of the land. So if you don't have a healthy landscape, you don't have healthy culture, and thusly don't have healthy people. So, but I see it as woo, opportunity. You know, we get to start from the ground level up. You know, yay! But it's beautiful. But lots to be done. Lots of visions to be achieved and implemented out there.
Yeah, I can just feel how monumental this moment is for you and for your tribal colleagues. So today's a big day because phase one of fundraising, it ends today. And you have roughly we can actually just say it. You have $1,427,000. So you have less than $75,000 left to raise for this $1.5 million target. We only have a minute left. How are you feeling? It seems to be a very big win, a very big win of a journey that is still going to be unfolding, but today should be celebrated.
Today should be celebrated. We should all be celebrating. We're moving the needle in the right direction. It's exciting and terrifying. It feels like we can just be like, yay, the fight is over. And there's so many things yet to address. But this piece to get people together out there on the land, the elders, especially with the youth, that is the way that we keep the culture moving forward. You got to have those coffee moments in the morning where people just gather because they're all there and somebody's making something yummy. And that is where all of our families, right? That's what, when you're together, that's where you get told the histories and plan together and do all the things. So this is the opportunity for this to happen for the first time. Honestly, since the gold rush for our folks.
Well, I hope that this is just the first of many conversations we have with you as we follow you along this process. The next phase two deadline is in May, correct?
It's in May. That one's a little more flexible. These are for building the endowment, getting all of the other things done. There's so much to do out there. There's a lot of work to do, and that work takes funding, unfortunately. And so I hope people stay connected. If they've already donated or you want to donate, donate today. But stay connected because we are going to be very intentional on sharing our progress so that people stay engaged and feel as good as we do.
Well, we're grateful that you took some time out of your already super packed schedule, Shelley. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Shelley Covert is a spokesperson for the Nevada City Rancheria Nisenan Tribal Council and is also the executive director of the California Heritage Indigenous Research Project, also known as CHIRP. And we've been talking about their effort to purchase 232 acres of ancestral Nisenan homeland in Nevada County, which is closing in on its goal with just less than $75,000 left out of its $1.5 million goal. And with that, that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. And if you want to join the conversation, reach out to us, email us at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producer Sarit Lashinsky and managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer and audio engineer is Chris Feltz. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. And our original show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you back here on Monday.